But right now, we're also delighted to have with us somebody who is very familiar with two big events that one has taken place, just kind of officially starting, and the other one is going to be online very soon and is near and dear to our hearts. We're talking about Paul Eisenstein, who's with us, and Paul is the editor of the Detroit Bureau. Paul, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Good to be with you. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And welcome back.
Yes.
Thank you.
You have been on the road, I understand, from Las Vegas.
Yeah, I just got back last night. I'm sitting here slamming copy, some of my advance copy and everything else for the auto show coming up. So it's a jump from frying pan into fire.
And a lot of the things I would imagine that you dealt with at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, really are tied very directly now with our North American International Auto Show.
Well, it's very interesting to watch how the auto industry has changed in terms of how they show products to the media and to the world. It used to be that everything came out at auto shows, and a handful of those. A number of the classic car shows have all but drifted away. Chicago is barely a media event anymore. A couple of European shows have largely vanished. And even Detroit, which is still the number one show in North America, is fighting a little bit for its primacy, if you will, as a media event with, of all things, CES. A number of things were launched there that you would have expected in the past to be introduced here, primarily Chrysler. Fiat Chrysler is doing a news conference in Detroit.
Really?
Instead, no, isn't that a surprise? Instead, they decided to launch their Chrysler Portal concept at CES, and not without good reason, by the way. This is a very high-tech electric EV, or I should say electric minivan concept, all loaded up with all sorts of technology, including autonomous technology. So I can see where it fit in very well, and we saw a number of other vehicles debuting there rather than here.
So I'm wondering, do we have consumer products going into vehicles, or is your vehicle going to be the biggest computer you've ever owned?
It's interesting you said that, because several of the executives I spoke to out there, Mike O'Brien, one of the senior guys from Hyundai, Carlos Ghosn, of course, the CEO of Nissan and Renault, and now Mitsubishi, talked about exactly that and said the lines are blurring between cars and high tech, and also car shows and high tech shows.
Well, why is it that they chose CES for drawing the public's attention, or not the industry's attention, the world's attention, to these things for cars rather than one of the premier car shows? Still doesn't make much sense.
There's a couple of reasons why, and one of them has to do with gaining attention. Whenever you introduce a new product, you want to get as much, if you will, ink or digital ink or airtime as possible. And you may recall that at one point we had 70 different products introduced at the Detroit Auto Show in 1 year. I remember talking with Rod Alberts, who is the genius behind turning the Detroit show from a regional to a true global show. And Rod asked me, are we introducing too many? And I had to say, you may be, because one of the problems was for us as reporters, you simply run out of space. Even if you're doing it online, where you can essentially run as many pages as you want, you have only so much time, and the reader has only so many things that they're going to look at. And so a lot of the automakers measure things very, very carefully, especially in the digital world, and they look and they say, I did this $1 million investment at the Detroit Auto Show, and I got no page views, I got no ink, and so on. And that worries some of these guys. So they're being much more careful these days about where they introduce things. In some cases, they say, this is a high-tech product. It goes better at CES. And in some cases, they're doing things in non-auto show, entirely away from the auto show circuit.
By the way, Paul Eisenstein is our guest here in this hour of the program. We're going to be focusing both on CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, and the North American International Auto Show in just a moment. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Kel Carson here. We're talking about the Consumer Electronics Show and the North American International Auto Show, and the way they're kind of blending together with Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor of the Detroit Bureau. Paul, first of all, give us a little bit of an idea what the Detroit Bureau is, because that's something that you have developed in the recent years after covering the auto industry for many, many years.
Well, actually, it started out as my news service, an independent news service, which represents everybody from NBC News to The Economist, to some various NPR shows, of course, folks like yourself, and quite a few others. And I've been doing that since 1979.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And I started my first internet publication back in 1996, 20 years.
My
almost
goodness.
21 now, which is, you know, eternity. It's longer, you know, it's like ancient Rome by web years. And I sold that off a few years ago, launched the DetroitBureau.com about 6 years ago. So we, or is it seven? Jeez, I've lost my sense of time. But we are the voice of the auto industry, we like to think of ourselves. Mm. We really try to cover it in depth rather than, oh, I hate to say it, so many folks online these days, it's three paragraphs and you're out of there.
Yeah.
And we try to give you a real in-depth coverage of what's happening.
I appreciate that too, Paul, and that's why we have the pleasure of having you on with us. But could we step back and talk a little bit about CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, just in general, some of the things that you saw there, and then we'll be getting into talking about looking ahead as well to the North American International Auto Show in just a little bit. But as I looked at the headlines coming on, and I don't know about you, you love gadgets as much as I do.
Absolutely.
It didn't seem like there was a whole lot to talk about in terms of gadgets. Or is that just, like a lot of it was, quote unquote, under the hood?
You know, it's interesting. You're absolutely right. When it comes to a lot of the stuff that the Consumer Electronics Show was known for, televisions, smartphones, laptops, even drones, wasn't an awful lot of news. There are bits and pieces. There's some really cool things here and there. You know, these high-tech electric skateboards and what have you. The next generation of HDR television sets. Quantum dots was the buzzword we heard.
Mm.
But, yeah, you're right. It wasn't as much there. The two areas where there seemed to be any real serious buzz, one was robotics. We're just starting to reach the point where people are coming up with robots that are cute and fun and may actually have some functionality. I should add, there were three areas. Another was we heard a lot about personal assistants. You know, I hate to tell you how many Amazon Echoes I own. And what's very interesting is that these personal assistants are now beginning to show up in other places. So you're going to see Alexa, the personal assistant tied to the Amazon Echo, start showing up in appliances, and that leads me to the third area, into cars. So Ford announced that they are integrating Alexa into their sync system going forward, and just about every other automaker there talked about the virtual assistants they were going to create. I'm getting them all confused. Hyundai had Hannah. Toyota had one with, I hate to say it, a very Japanese name. Another manufacturer is introducing, is moving Cortana. Nissan is going to work with Microsoft to take their assistant, Cortana, and move that into their cars.
Yeah. We're going to have to get a list of names to see who we're talking to.
So, Paul, I have to ask the question. Was there anyone there talking about getting all these girls together so they'll talk to each other? Because right now they're all their own independent sororities.
Yeah, they are. Actually, I just read this morning that somebody has a website where they are tracking live a conversation between two of the Google personal assistants. Apparently, they are just having this endless conversation. At one point, one proposed to the other. They declared themselves married. The other one said, I want to marry you again, so it said, okay, we're divorced. It eventually led them to explore the nature of God. One of them declared himself God.
Oh, my Lord.
And I guess you can track this live on the internet.
So this is all, and this is all independent of human intervention, right? This is all AI, essentially?
Yeah. We are reaching the point. Now, I'm going to get a little off the car subject for 1 second. But what's really interesting is we're approaching that concept which has been out there for a while called the Uncanny Valley. I don't know if you've ever talked about this before.
Nope.
The Uncanny Valley is a concept that people talk about that will occur when you are literally unable to tell whether you are talking or working with a machine or a human being.
Ah.
And some of the theorists have said that it will actually cause a bit of a nervous stutter for humans when it happens, when you are trying to decide, am I talking to a human or a machine?
As long as I can understand them, I'm all for it.
Well, you know what was interesting, Paul, is I saw a YouTube video about Watson Pepper. Have you heard about Pepper?
No, I haven't.
So Watson Pepper, is IBM's cognitive. It's IBM's cognitive computing. It's basically a cloud-based program now. It's not.
It's played chess and
well, yeah. It was. That's where it started, and it was kind of one computer. Well,
and
now it's
did,
a series of many.
Jeopardy, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
So now what they've done is they partnered with SoftBank, apparently, over in Japan, and they started out with 100 Peppers, Watson Peppers, that were selling Nestle coffee machines. They're now going to over 1,000 Peppers that they're producing because what they found was that this little, it's a white R2-D2. I mean, it looks like...
Oh, that's
like
what Pepper is.
But he's tall. He's okay. Don't say 6 inches. He's 4 feet tall.
Oh, okay.
Right? And he walks around and in the store, and he entices people to come over, and
yes,
he tells them about their coffee machine.
I saw that the other day. But if I remember correctly, it still has a little trouble with speech and voice recognition, so you still have to type on a keyboard. They're working on the speech side.
That's not what I saw and not what I heard.
All right, I may be confusing that with another one, but I thought that was the case.
So this apparently has gotten... The number of coffee machines it sells... is way higher than the humans because they can read sentiment in a person's facial features and their voice.
No kidding.
And they don't miss. They do it right every time.
And so
they're selling them. And so what's happening is Nestle is investing in a lot of these. It's amazing. And it learns. Every time it has an interaction, it learns a little bit more about how to interact with the
next
person.
Ed, were you going to say something?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say this because we were at the Faraday Future preview.
That's a new vehicle, right? The new electric vehicle.
That's a high-performance vehicle. By the way, an electric car, forget the silliness that we were coming to believe that electric vehicles were slow and not fun. This is a 1,050 horsepower supercar called the FF91, capable of launching from 0 to 60 in 2.39 seconds, which would make it the fastest production car in the world. Now, I say would because they're having major problems, financial problems. They had to halt the construction of their factory in North Las Vegas. So a lot of people are skeptical that they will actually make it into production. If they do, it'll be pretty significant. It's not just the high performance. It's not just the 300-plus miles range per charge. But the vehicle also is designed to actually integrate seamlessly into everything you do. It will have multiple antennas, Wi-Fi. It will have a learning engine on board. It will be able to recognize you using facial recognition and all sorts of other things and be able to, for example, set various vehicle settings, have the right music playing, and it will learn about you. So it will continue to get smarter and integrate, be able to talk to you and so on. And Faraday's not the only one. When we get back, if we have a minute, I'll tell you about one more.
Okay. Assistant. That sounds like, was it Knight Rider? Was it Kit? Was the name of the car? Knight Rider. It could really be happening. Paul Eisenstein is our guest. We're kind of exploring a strange universe out there. The Uncanny Valley with Paul Eisenstein here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Cal Carson, and We're having a lot of fun with Paul Eisenstein, who is the editor of the Detroit Bureau. We're talking about CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. It's in Las Vegas. Like Lost Vegas. Lost Wages or yeah. Las Vegas?
Lost Wages, yes.
Ed's been out there quite a few times, and he's got a little grin on his face as he talks about
it. Well, I just know how spread out everything is down there. And so the first time we had Paul on the show, like 4 or 5 years ago, he, you know, and I felt a lot of pity for him that he was out in Las Vegas. Yeah, right. Oh, it's so difficult. I went there. I can't believe how spread out it is down there.
It is not fun.
No.
I had to get from one hotel to another to cover a couple of events. I had to walk a quarter mile to get on the monorail. Mm-hmm. You get off, you have to walk through. If people don't understand.
Yeah, the Taj Mahal. I mean,
I had to get off at the back of the MGM Grand, walk through it. It's actually bigger than the town I live in, the town of Pleasant Ridge.
Oh, my
God. Had to cross Las Vegas Boulevard, walk another mile to get to the hotel where they were holding that event, walk through that hotel to the back. So it took me about an hour.
Wow.
So that's
even
almost
with mass transit.
That's almost 10,000 steps.
Yeah, I got my exercise.
Yeah. That's you don't have to go to the gym or rock on the treadmill now.
Paul, just before we broke up, I want to make sure that in the time that we have, we also look ahead a little bit at the North American International Auto Show. But you were saying that there was another vehicle besides the FF9 by Faraday, am I right?
Yeah, well, we were talking about the FF91,
91,
which, of course, has a smart technology on board designed
right.
to learn about you.
Mm-hmm.
And several of the other ones out there. The other vehicles that we saw had these smart assistants on board. One that I got a kick out of, though, and I'll tell you real quickly before we get to Nias, that was the HANA smart assistant on board the little Nuvi, I think is how Honda pronounces its little two-seat ride-sharing vehicle. And oh. HANA not only is designed to learn about you, but she's designed to recognize your moods through a whole bunch of things, probably me cursing at the car in front of me. And she is supposedly going to be capable of doing things like adjusting the mood lighting inside the vehicle.
No.
Changing channels, doing all sorts of things. Even, I think they said, putting scents out to try to adjust
your mood. Aromatherapy. Aromatherapy, there
you go. Wonderful, yes.
Wouldn't that help with rush hour?
Yeah, I can go to AutoZone and pick up a new canister of that, I'm sure.
A little jazz, kind of cool, you know, calm you down.
Exactly. I like this, yeah.
Paul, let's look ahead then, if we could, in the time we have here, and I want to talk with you. We can get you back next week. We'll talk about some of the things that are going on at NIS at the North American International Auto Show as well. But if you could, now the press days are going to be starting on Sunday, I believe.
Yeah, press days
start more or less tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, January the...
Tomorrow. 8th. Sunday, yep.
Okay, yes.
And
right.
And then it's, then supplier days are after that, and then we have
right.
the big day preview.
The big day, I should say, will be on Monday. That's when all the cars are shown. There'll be technology. We'll have a lot of sneak peeks on Sunday evening, tomorrow evening, at all the a lot of the makers, GMC, Mercedes-Benz, and the like, will bring us in. We'll be embargoed, and when we can talk about things, the big press day is going to be on Monday.
Right, right. I remember that. Cal, go ahead.
Hey, Paul, who's supposed to be the big one that's supposed to bring the big surprise this year to the show?
Well, Ford is about the only one that has been very, very secretive about it. There's GAC, Guangzhou Automotive Corporation out of China, which has not given us full details on what they're bringing out. And I think there may be one or two surprises. One that a lot of us are looking forward to is going to be seeing the Volkswagen ID, which is the next concept vehicle in this new line of electrics that they bring out. It's apparently going to be an electric version of their old microbus. And it suggests that they might actually bring the old microvan back, but battery-powered.
Complete with peace sign and everything?
I hope so.
Hey, Paul, what do you think is going to be the impact? No, I mean, everybody and all the political processes are kind of, you know, holding their breath, waiting for the new president-elect to come in. Have you heard any kind of rumblings in terms of preparing for the new administration when you were at CES and now looking forward to NIS?
Oh, yeah. All the automakers are trying to figure out how much is just optics and how much is real in his tweet war with the various automakers. You know, he took on Toyota this last week, and before that General Motors, and before that Ford Motor Company. And Ford, as you know, got a lot of press this past week because they announced that they were canceling plans to build a $1.6 billion factory down in Pasito in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you that a lot of the coverage was very wrong.
How so?
A lot of the news coverage was very wrong. To tell you the truth, the decision to cancel that plant had absolutely zip, nada, nothing to do with Donald Trump. I have been outlining the details on the site. It turned out Ford started, you know, Ford planned to move their small car production to Mexico, primarily the Ford Focus.
Right.
The then candidate Trump got on his high horse, started talking about that, warning about big tariffs and so on, and saying he was going to force Ford to bring it back. Well, Ford wound up doing some number crunching, and as you know, the market is going to SUVs, crossovers, and trucks, not to passenger cars. Ford realized they don't have enough volume and focus, and they won't, to support that plant. So what they're going to do is they're killing that plant, $1.6 billion savings, moving production of the Focus to another Mexican plant, not bringing it back to the U.S. That got lost in a lot of the coverage. They're still going to build it in Mexico, just move it into the Hermosillo plant and spend a lot less money to do it. Now, they got some savings, some of which they're going to use to pay for the production of electric vehicles at the Flat Rock plant here in Michigan.
Oh, okay.
However, they were going to do that in the U.S. anyway, probably at the Flat Rock plant anyway. And so we're clear, the plans for cutting the Mexican plant were already in place before the election when everybody seemed to think that Hillary was going to win, and the board voted on it almost right after the election, so they had all the paperwork in place, so the board approved that really before everything was in place. So that was not a response to Trump. It was a response to simple economics.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense to move that into a new plant. They're still going ahead. They're still building the Focus in Mexico.
Ed, I got two things. First, is anyone going to, when he takes office, are they going to get rid of his Twitter account, first of all?
No.
And the other thing, because I remember they took Barack Obama's BlackBerry away from him when he came into office because he was like addicted to it. And the second thing was, I mean, is these large vehicles, they're the most profitable for the automotive companies. But as soon as gas starts getting around $3.50 again, which, you know, that's probably not too far around the corner. I mean, that could happen on a whim. Small cars going to become popular once again?
Unless you start seeing $5 and $6 a gallon gas, I don't think so.
Okay.
Here's what's happened. The gas prices, sure, have helped push big utes and the like. But what has also helped is that utes have now become more car-like. You know, they're crossovers, than traditional truck-based vehicles. And if you look at their fuel economy, in many cases, they're getting almost the same as the car-like vehicles that they're replacing. The Honda, what do they call it? The Fit versus, why am I drawing a blank on the name? They're small, the HRX. The HRX gets virtually identical fuel economy to the Honda Fit, and this is the same across the board. So you're not really sacrificing fuel economy anymore. So people are saying, well, fine, I may downsize my ute, but I'll stay with a ute rather than going back to a sedan.
Yeah. I've got to ask, why are people getting these big pickups? I mean, big honking pickups.
I want to see over the vehicle in front of me.
Because they have really cute and attractive leases that they're given for those vehicles, and people are taking advantage of them.
The economics.
You get a great deal on it.
Yeah, that's one reason. But the fact is, a lot of people just like pickups. They like that whole
being big
image.
And above traffic and, you know, get out of my way kind of thing.
Oh, you know, and you see, when you're driving something small and you see an F-250, a Super Duty, coming back up on you in a rearview mirror, you're moving out of the way.
Yeah. I'm envious of, definitely.
So that's some of the things that are coming up. Anything particularly near and dear to your heart, Paul, we wrap up on this, as we're looking forward to the North American International Auto Show. Any particular vehicles that have kind of, plucked the strings of your heart and you said, I really, really would like one of them?
Well, the Audi Q8 concept, which is basically, again, an example of how things are changing. Their old Audi 8 series, I'm sorry, the A8 was their flagship. Well, now they have a Q8 concept, which will become their new SUV flagship. We're going to see this Concept X2, which is sort of halfway between a BMW sedan and a crossover. We're going to be watching for all the creativity that comes as automakers try to redefine what they're all about.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of cool things. Though I'm glad, I've got to tell you before we wrap up, I am really glad that at least a few traditional passenger cars are there, including one I'm really looking forward to. From Kia, of all people, their first ever sports car called the Stinger.
Ooh, well, Paul, we're going to check with you next week about that when you've had a chance to be on the floor there and to maybe get a chance to sit in it as well. Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau, we look forward to having you to talk more about this later on.